Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck, and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Chambreau. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Yes, I do. You're on. Just a minute.
Oh, good.
We've got a bunch of music, and I'm looking for it so that I can lower the level of it. And here we are. And I can't see the chat. I got to his chat room, as you saw, but now I can't see mine.
Okay. Well,
oh, here. I know what to do. Wait a sec. I think I know what to do.
Okay. You just have to go into the show page, and the chat room is underneath it. It looks like they keep the chat room open from one show to the next. It's kind of complicated. This is the first time we're doing back-to-back shows.
Right. Yep.
So, okay. So you are on the air live, and I'm going to give you an introduction so that people can find out that we are welcoming. Hi, I am Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and our new co-host, Christina Chambreau, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, October 6, 2011. And we are so fortunate that you have listened to the previous show and contributed some thoughts and questions. And now you're on here to guide us through some typical pet problems. And we are hoping that as we announce the show and get more airwaves, people learning about it, that will get people to send in comments and questions before the show begins, so we'll know exactly what kind of questions they want answered. And so we want everybody to be involved. Don't forget that you can friend the show on Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community. You can favorite it. You can download the archives so that you can conveniently listen. It sounds like you're on air on your iPod, iTunes, or your computer. And a little background about Christina Chambreau, DVM. She is an internationally known homeopathic veterinarian, an author, and a speaker. And I just recently heard her on the National Center for Homeopathy webinars, and I do want to encourage people. They're going to be having a huge campaign for more people to join Homeopathy World Community and just go to their, I think it's homeopathic.org, and let them know that you heard it from Homeopathy World Community. Let's see. Christina may be having some sort of an error.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Great. So I can talk. I'm not getting the chat room, but I'm talking fine.
Okay,
so
don't worry about the chat room
then. Just Skype me if anybody.
Yeah.
And how many people do we have? How many people do we have on yet?
Hold on a second. I'm reloading. Maybe it's going to work for you in a moment. It looks like it's reloading the chat. It probably held on to the previous show page. And we're going to see if it's going to load that. If it doesn't, I can start it again. I think we have about five people listening today.
Wonderful.
Live. And here we are, yeah. We've got about five people. So now let me see. Well, what I was doing was introducing you a little bit, giving the folks some background, that you have written a book called Healthy Animals Journal that was published in 2003, that you graduated from the University of Georgia Veterinary College in the year 1980, and that you began using homeopathy in your veterinary practice in 1983. That was just 3 years after you got your veterinary degree. And there, maybe you'll have a story to tell us about that. And has you've been primarily using homeopathy since 1988. And I can say that you are a very dynamic teacher and also the founder of the Academy of Veterinary Homeopathy. You lecture at many conventions, schools, clubs, and to anybody who's going to be concerned and want to listen about improving the health of their animals. Boy, you are so busy. You teach 1 to 10 day courses, and you're also a co-author of a repertory tutorial and also how to have a stress-free wedding. A stress-free wedding. You jumped from taking care of kitty cats and puppy dogs to something else that happened in the family that really...
Well, I got married. Soon after I started homeopathy. My husband and I got married in 1985 or 86, somewhere around there. And we had which could have produced a whole lot of stress, but he's mastered the hidden causes of stress, and therefore we didn't result with stress for our wedding. And so sometime after our wedding, we wrote the book, How to Have a Stress-Free Wedding and Live Happily Ever After, and we've been married 26 years, so it works, absolutely. And, you know, that really applies to our animals and ourselves. I think one of the key important things about health is that we realize that health is a journey, just like a marriage is a journey. It's not a place you get to where all of a sudden the marriage works perfectly. It's not a place where you get to where once you found the perfect treatment, the perfect constitutional remedy, that you stay incredibly healthy for the rest of your life and never have any problems. It just doesn't work that way. So we have to realize that we're on a journey. And part of the journey of health is actually death at the end. Those of us who sign on to have animals in our life do have, we sign on knowing that because dogs and cats live not as long as we do, we're going to have multiple deaths to deal with in our lifetime. And part of what animals are here to teach us in their wonderful ways is how to love, process, be with, be able to deal with death. But on the journey to health, as a homeopathic veterinarian, I and other holistic and homeopathic colleagues have discovered that there are basically 7 keys to good health. And Debbie can tell you how that's available so that you can actually get that as a download. And so we're going to go through those briefly today. And since I still can't get the chat room, maybe you can send me a Skype as to who's here. So those of you who are on the call, if you would type in what your experience is with homeopathy. Have you done a lot of homeopathy, or have you really never heard of homeopathy? And also type in if you have how many dogs and cats, chickens, okay, horses, cows, goats, pigs, guinea pigs, et cetera, that you have in your family. So the first thing is, whether it's for people or for animals, we all know that eating the best diet is important. For those of us who are homeopaths, the founder of homeopathy, Samuel Hahnemann, in his textbook, The Organon, actually says that you have to have a good diet, an adequate diet. Now, it was different back then than it is now. And he had different criteria than we would have now. But if I ask the question, now, can I hear other people? Can they talk, or are they muted, Debbie?
There's nobody. Nobody's called in. It's
You
and me. We're talking.
We're the only talkers.
Other.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll ask you the question, and
sure.
Everybody think about what the answer is, which is, what's the best food for people to eat, fresh or processed?
Well, obviously, everybody knows the answer.
Is fresh.
Yeah.
And so then the next question is, what's the best food to feed your animals, fresh or processed? Well, it would be fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you realize that feeding fresh food is far better than feeding processed food, the next thing that most people tell me is, well, but the food I feed is organic. It's Newman's or PetGuard's organic. And I go, well, that would be like going to the health food store and eating 100% of your food in Amy's organic frozen meals, Amy's burritos, organic refried beans, Muir Glen's organic soups.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not sufficient. You would not be happy eating the same 5 cans of organic soup and that's all you ever ate. So we need fresh food. Now, once you get into the fresh food area, we'll do a whole talk about nutrition. We're going to be doing these calls weekly. And those of you who are listening in and doing this later can send in a communication to say what you would like to hear about. But one of the ones most people want to hear about is nutrition. And so we'll do at least one, if not 2 or 3 calls on what's the best food to feed. But the bottom line is fresh, and then you look at what are dogs and cats. They're carnivores mostly, omnivores to carnivores. They have ripping and tearing teeth, bone-crunching teeth, and no row of chewing molars.
You're talking about dogs and cats.
Like you and I have a row of molars, and our grandmother tells us to chew our food 20 times for each bite, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dogs and cats don't have that. They have just the big canines, and then between the canines in the front, they have these little incisors that are good for chewing, nibbling at their skin, but not much more. And then there's a few teeth to hold the space from the canines going back to the great big molars. And the big molars in the back are to crunch bones. Dogs and cats don't sit there and chew and chew and chew and chew. In the wild, what they do is they have something too big to swallow, so they rip and tear to make it small enough to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the purpose of the mouth. And dogs and cats have no digestive enzymes in their mouth. So they don't start breaking down the food there. Literally, it's just to get it small enough to swallow. Their jaws even go just straight up and down and not side to side. So they're not designed for grinding. So they're not designed for eating grains, because grains need to be ground to be broken up. Even you know that if you don't chew your rice, it may come out undigested. Then dogs and cats have a stomach that's full of acid, just like we do. But our food only sits there for 30 minutes. Their food sits in the stomach for hours, 4 to 12 hours, depending on what kind of food they've eaten. And then they have the shorter digestive intestinal tract, much shorter than ours, and certainly much shorter than horses and cows and mice and rabbits. So the food doesn't have a chance to be absorbed very well. Now, in the wild, where do they get their vegetables mostly?
In the wild, I only think of like a grazing, you know, grazing or grass or...
Okay, where else would they maybe get vegetables? What are they eating? What kind of animals are they eating?
Oh, you mean they're eating animals that...
Exactly. They're eating animals that eat vegetables and have grinding teeth.
Oh, okay.
So the mice and the rabbits and the gophers are eating grasses, seeds, and nuts, which are high protein, high carbohydrate. Like a squirrel is eating acorns, and the squirrel sits there and chews and chews and chews and chews. then the dog or cat kills the squirrel and eats often, not always, the stomach and the intestines. So they're eating pre-digested vegetables. The closest we come to that is to puree them in a food processor or in a juicer. And you can do some cooked vegetables, some raw vegetables. And again, we'll go more in detail in this later, but once you're at this point, it's just like with people diets. There's vegan diets for people, and there's Weston Price traditional diet with high meat, high fat, and fermented vegetables. And different people do well with different approaches to health. Same thing is true for dogs and cats. Within this basic of eat the raw, basically raw meat, and pureed vegetables. Once you're starting with that, then you have to do some exploring. And again, we'll talk more about this on a future call. So that's number one step for health. And number two is not to vaccinate. And we were just every week you can hear about the issues with vaccinations for people. Well, the same thing is true for animals. As a homeopath, we ask all of these questions about, well, when did that problem begin? When did the asthma start? When did the diarrhea start? And then we say, well, what happened around that time? And depending on the condition, it could be as much as 80% of the animals who start with asthma were vaccinated within 1 to 2 months before the asthma began, or maybe even a day before. Even with goats, we're seeing more problems because people are vaccinating much more than they used to. The less vaccines, the healthier the animals will be. And so that is really key. Now, there is one vaccine that with dogs and cats, you legally must give. So legally, you must give the rabies vaccine. The good news is that there are many things you can do to have the rabies vaccine be less likely to damage the animal. Number one is be sure that your dog or cat is as healthy as possible when the vaccine is given. I have to admit that when I was merely a conventional veterinarian, I would give vaccines 1 to 4 months before they were due if I was anesthetizing an animal to do a teeth cleaning or clean out an abscess, because I thought I was harming less because they wouldn't feel the needle going into them. And I still talk to veterinarians today who think that. We just don't think as conventional veterinarians, many of us. And so I was doing great damage doing that. But I've made up for it by telling people not to vaccinate. So there are things, so in the package insert of vaccines, it says for use in healthy animals only. So if you're going somewhere like to an emergency clinic and they say, oh, we can't treat your dog or cat because it's not current on its vaccines, you say, well, but the insert says for use in healthy animals only. So that will help you get through that.
Right. Yeah, well, there's a couple of points, and maybe this ties into our previous show about vaccinations, because we don't often talk about what we can learn statistically from what happens when animals and livestock and pets do receive vaccinations and the outcomes from that. We don't really bring that into the human arena of what happens, how we can make a connection. I mean, obviously, through the pharmaceutical company, they have to go through a series of stages to get a drug accepted, and they do animal testing. And therefore, in the same way, you can think about vaccinations as being experimental drugs. And if they're being given to animals and we see this kind of a detrimental outcomes to their health, whether it be, and you know much more than I about, you're saying asthma, it affects their lungs,
any disease their bowel. There is. Any disease there is, Deborah, can be caused by vaccines.
Okay.
Vaccines are simply, like the other things we'll talk about in the seven keys for health, including diet, vaccines are simply one of the things that weakens the overall energy field of an animal. And then whatever the weakness is in that vital force, there's a susceptibility to something bothering it. Some animals can be vaccinated every year of their life for 10 different illnesses and never be sick. They don't have a susceptibility to vaccines. Other animals can be vaccinated once and die because they're so susceptible to vaccines. Most are somewhere in between. And then you have the weakness, the weak areas of the body. So one animal may be weak in the lung area. And if they're exposed to too many chemicals in the house, to the wrong diet, to too much emotional stress, or to vaccines, when their energy field or vital force is weakened, that's what they're going to get. They're going to get respiratory problems. They'll get the asthma. Another dog or cat might get digestive problems, chronic vomiting, chronic diarrhea. So it's not
right.
that vaccines are the worst thing in the world. It's just that, number one, they're not needed, and number two, they are a powerful toxin that can weaken the animal.
Right.
The good news is that you do not legally have to do anything but rabies. So when what you're doing is one vaccine for rabies every 3 years, most dogs and cats can tolerate that. There's a wonderful Yahoo group called Just Say No to Vaccinations, and I recommend anybody concerned with vaccines for animals join that listserv, look at their archives. It's really wonderful. And a great book on vaccines is Don Hamilton's book, Homeopathic Care for Cats and Dogs, and he has one whole chapter on vaccinations. And it's good for anybody who's, you might want to mention it on your people vaccine shows as well, because he talks about the people issues as well. He has charts of the smallpox and the polio and how they were already going down, actually whooping cough, measles, and polio, how they were already going down because of cleanliness and hygiene even before the vaccines came on the scene.
Yes, I believe we've mentioned that numerous times. How about, can you tell me again the author of that one book
mentioned? Don Hamilton?
Yes, okay, Don Hamilton. Okay.
Don Hamilton, Homeopathic Care for Cats and Dogs. Now, the other good news is that there are some things you can do when you're giving the legally required rabies and your animal is as healthy as possible. There's something called Reiki, and Reiki can be learned easily by anyone, and it basically turns your hands into healers. They get hot when they're around illness. But they also, your hands can, quote, it's not quite how a Reiki person or maybe the Reiki leaders would say this, but it sort of makes things better, detoxifies, takes the bad out. I can be sitting in a restaurant that has very chlorinated water, tastes horrible, and I will do Reiki on the glass of water until my hands stop being hot, maybe a minute or two, and the water will taste great. You can also Reiki a vaccine, holding the syringe in your hand. Once you've done further levels, you don't need to even hold it in your hand. You can do it long distance. But if otherwise, you hold it in your hand. Now, if you're going to a veterinarian who you think would just kick you out the door if you say you want to Reiki the vaccine, number one, go to a different veterinarian. But number two, in the moment, if you're in a pinch, what you do is you say, you know, I have heard that vaccines cause tumors. They cause fibrosarcomas in dogs and cats, and I'm really worried about it. So would you please let me pray over the vaccine? No veterinarian will tell you you can't pray over your vaccine. And so you do the Reiki, which is a form of praying, so you're not lying. And the second is, once you've left the clinic, or if you're in a good clinic, you Reiki the injection site itself. And then for the next 2 weeks, you offer Reiki to the animal.
So this is a human being using like hands-on healing. It's not exactly hands-on because your hands are away from the body, and you're doing this to feel the energy of the living organism, the pet, and get you want the hands to be warm or hot or be what are you looking for when you're doing the Reiki?
Well, you'll learn that when you do the Reiki class.
Oh, okay.
For every person, it's different. You take a Reiki class, you learn how to do this.
So I'm going to be a doubter. I mean, I'm going to say honestly, I have never heard of saying that you can do Reiki over a glass of water that tastes bad or you think has chlorine in it or whatever kind of heavy metals. Or that you can say, I'm going to give this animal an injection, yet I'm going to do this Reiki to lessen the bad effects.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is really news to me.
Well, let me give you a couple of a few examples of this, because Reiki also fits into one of the other seven keys of health. So one of the seven keys of health is that we learn healing techniques that we can use on our animals ourselves. And Reiki is profoundly effective at eliminating pain. So it's an emergency treatment that you want to be able to do with your hands. It can also change emotional states. So a lot of foster dogs, rescue dogs, and cats, and horses, and goats, and llamas, and alpacas, it can really make a difference. And it can even, in some, depending on who's giving the Reiki and on how receptive the animal is to it, I have seen it completely change, have tumors go away or diabetes go away. It doesn't make a claim to do that. All I'm saying is I have seen it happen. So it is one of many powerful healing techniques. I'm a doubter too, and I was teaching one of my week-long classes. And I went out to dinner with some of my students, and the water was just awful. And I had remembered earlier at a luncheon that week, one of my other students who was a Reiki master, raking her water to make it taste good, and I thought, well, I'll try this. I don't think it'll work, but I'll try it. So I Reiki'd this glass of water, and it tasted great. And I thought, oh, I'm just imagining it.
Right. I mean, it's like a placebo.
Hang on.
Yeah.
My student who was sitting, one of the students sitting next to me a few minutes later said, oh, this water really tastes bad. And I said, taste mine. Period. That's all I said. She drank it and she said, oh, this tastes really good. What did you do to it? I said, give me your glass. So I Reiki'd her glass. And then she thought it tasted good. When they refilled our glasses, it tasted bad again. So that time I Reiki'd both glasses at one time and they both tasted fine.
Wow.
I think we need
to do some tests. Okay.
So the other thing, just to let you know, is that the University of Maryland Shock Trauma Center, okay, is that conventional enough for you? The University of Maryland Shock Trauma Center is now requiring that every nurse on its staff be trained as a Reiki practitioner.
Wow.
Because they've seen such effectiveness, they do it pre-surgery and post-surgery for everybody in the shock trauma unit.
I wonder how many universities or hospitals are actually instituting that. I know that I've seen a number of them.
Hang on a sec, because we'll talk about these things later, but I want to make sure we have time to get through all seven for animals, since this talk is more about animals.
Oh, I could easily take you off topic. Okay, go ahead.
So with vaccinations, we're on the second key to good health, which is vaccines. So you're going to do the least, and then when you have to do one, you're going to Reiki the syringe. If you don't know Reiki, you can contact a Reiki practitioner, and they can do it long distance. So Reiki is one. Number two for vaccine, well, number one is make sure they're as healthy as possible. Number two is Reiki. Number three, Lynn Peck is a practitioner and a researcher in Florida, a veterinarian, and she's discovered that when a vaccine is given, calcium levels plummet in the body. So we don't have any how much to give because most people are using some form of muscle testing and applied kinesiology to decide how much calcium to give. So my recommendation is to give about 3 times the normal dose of calcium for 3 to 4 days. And one of the products that's really good to do that with is a standard process company's product called CalciFood. But you could even just grind up eggshells, or if you have bone meal, you could use some bone meal, and it's all based on the weights of your animals. But for a few days, it doesn't matter how much you give, you're not going to ever hurt. So give a bunch of calcium.
Okay.
And then the fourth that I like to recommend is a flower essence. Now, this also, again, speaks to things you can learn to do yourself. Flower essences are 100% safe. No animal has ever been harmed by a flower essence. No person has ever been harmed by giving a flower essence, even if it's not the right one. So it doesn't hurt, and often they cause profound healing and profound changes. So I recommend a company called Spirit Essences, which was started by a veterinarian, Dr. Gene Hovey, and they have a combination essence called Vaccine Detox. And I recommend giving it for a week before and 2 weeks after the rabies vaccine. The fifth and most important is that you carefully pay attention to the animal after the vaccine and look at the early warning signs for illness. The early warning signs for illness is one of the handouts that Debbie will tell you how to make available, how you can get hold of. And it's those things that we think are normal but really indicate these animals aren't completely healthy. So for a goat, it would be a goat that just seems to be a little lame in his joints. Not enough that you'd call the veterinarian, but you notice maybe he's just a little trouble getting up. Or a dog that has a little crud in the corner of its eyes. Or a cat who's drinking water but isn't eating dry food and is drinking a medium amount of water. So these are little things that we think are normal that really aren't. And so you look at that list of early warning signs after the vaccine, and if some of them appear, then you come in and find the homeopathic remedy that matches this particular animal. So you look up those remedies that are known to counteract vaccine problems, and there's about 100 of them. And then you narrow down that 100 remedies for which remedy matches the specific symptoms that appeared after you gave the rabies vaccine. This is much more effective than what many homeopaths do or people who've studied a little homeopathy do, which is some homeopaths, after every vaccine for whatever vaccine it is in whatever species, give Thuja. Others give Listen after rabies vaccine. Others give Hypericum after any vaccine. Others give Leadum after any vaccine. So rather than sort of shotgunning it, it's better to wait until there's symptoms and then treat specifically.
Okay.
Now, when the exception to that is if you have an animal who's been treated homeopathically and it has cured a symptom, like a small Lhasa Apso I treated who was very aggressive. He would bite people on their ankles, and he would attack strangers when they came into the house. And he was very aggressive, and he responded well to Lachesis, which is a homeopathic remedy. And when I gave his first rabies vaccine, after I had treated him and the aggression was gone, I did the Reiki, I did the calcium. Actually, we weren't doing the calcium or the flower essence at that point, so we just did the Reiki. And after about 3 to 5 days after the vaccine, he started getting aggressive again. So we immediately gave him the Lachesis. 3 years later, he had had an occasional time where we'd had to repeat the Lachesis. So I pre-treated him. When I gave the rabies vaccine, I gave him the Lachesis. So this was still individual for this dog. It wasn't just giving Thuja to every dog for every vaccine.
That's smart. Well, I think we should have a show talking specifically about this issue. Okay.
Yep.
So,
we absolutely will.
So far we've done
talked about nutrition. We've talked about vaccines, and we've talked a little bit about what you can learn to do yourself. The more things you can learn to do yourself, the better for your animals. So number one is Reiki. Number two is flower essences. Totally safe. You can't ever harm with them.
Right.
Number three is Tellington touch for animals. Anybody who has itchy animals, anxious animals, should learn how to do the anxiety wrap, where you take a ace bandage and wrap it around the dog or cat or goat in a figure eight pattern.
Okay.
And Tellington touch also teaches you small motions you can make with your hand or pulling on the ears or rubbing in a certain direction that can either calm an animal or wake up an animal or have a dog who can't seem to handle the steps be able to handle the steps. How they can learn better, how they can train better, how they can behave better. And you can't ever harm with Tellington touch. Another
okay.
very, very powerful healing method is healing touch for animals. And that's
okay.
another one. You go to classes, you learn how to do that. Tellington touch has a lot of material available on videos and books that are out there in addition to going to classes. So those
mm-hmm.
are a few of the ways that you can learn, plus, of course, learn how to do homeopathy. And learn homeopathy, learn the principles of homeopathy. In my book, The Healthy Animals Journal, I have a complete list of, maybe not complete, I take that back, I have an extensive list of different modalities that can be used to heal your animals. And in the front, I have a little bit that talks about how animals get ill and how they get well. And the book I spoke of earlier by Don Hamilton, Homeopathic Care for Cats and Dogs, has two chapters, chapter 2 and 3, The Nature of Disease and The Nature of Cure. So those two chapters go into more detail than what I go into,
mm-hmm.
but both give you an understanding of how animals get ill and how they recover. So that's a key. You want to learn those philosophies of homeopathy because they apply to any kind of treatment that you give. So that's one of the seven keys to health, is to understand how animals get ill and how they recover. You want to know if you're deeply curing, which means the current symptom appropriately goes away, however long it took to get there, it's taking time to recover. So a dog that's been itching for a year shouldn't stop itching in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It should take it a few months to slowly recover completely. A cat that's just come down with a fever should recover in a few hours. So it just depends on how long the symptoms have been there. A cure, they feel better emotionally. They feel better energetically. Some old symptoms come back and quickly go away. Those early warning signs of illness disappear. Then you know you're moving towards a cure. Palliation means you give the remedy, the symptom goes away quickly, but it comes back again, and you have to repeat the remedy or change to a different remedy. There's no getting better overall.
Okay.
Suppression is what I did with one dog. Dog had been itching for a year, and they called me, and I prescribed a remedy. 2 weeks later, I get the call back for her follow-up appointment, and she says, "Oh, Dr. Chambro, you're a miracle worker." And I'm
mm-hmm.
already going, uh-oh. And she said, "The itching stopped 5 minutes after I gave the remedy." I'm going, uh-oh, to myself. And then I started
mm-hmm.
questioning her carefully, and there was no increased energy. There was no, we couldn't, at the beginning, she couldn't come up with any emotional changes. There weren't that many early warning signs of illness, and I was sort of at a loss and thinking maybe this is one of those miracles, and I pushed her on the emotional a little. She said, "Oh, I forgot. She's been biting the children."
Oh,
so this
right.
is a case of suppression. The symptom, itching, went away too fast,
mm-hmm.
and a mental, a more deep symptom, appeared. So you need to understand how remedies, how any treatment affects an animal.
Right. So it goes for both humans and animals in the same way. You're really referring to Herring's Law, are you not?
Well, actually, no. I'm not just
no?
referring to Herring's Law. Herring's law isn't really a law. It's just an observation on how healing happens. So we also do notice some of the things he says. Like I mentioned, the return of an old symptom. We'll notice that in healing, symptoms move from least important organs or more internal organs from more important organs and more internal organs to more superficial organs or to more less important organs. So while the skin is a very important organ, and that's why Herring's law doesn't work as a law, because as a law, all four should work every time. But the skin is actually a very important organ. It's our barrier to the outside world, and yet it's the most superficial. So if your animals are having any kind of skin issues, make sure you're not suppressing them. Ear problems. Mm-hmm. I have a young puppy that's having horrendous ear problems, waking his mom up at 1 and 2 in the morning crying about them. And I said, hang in there. We've got to work at curing him. We don't want to suppress these ears. I know I might not be able to do my obedience class. They'll think he has ear mites. And I'll say, I'll tell him he doesn't. We have to be careful not to stop skin problems too quickly. So it is some of Herring's law, quote, do express themselves.
Okay,
more importantly, it's just understanding that they're feeling better overall as opposed to just getting rid of one symptom.
Right. So we're looking as owner and companion to our companions, we're looking for specific clues and symptoms toward healing and toward when they're not doing well. And you started off telling us the signs of to know that something is wrong, let's say because of poor nutrition or because of chemicals in the environment or because of vaccinations or even emotional problem. And now in the same way, we want to see those signs decreasing and the signs of health, meaning that they're not biting the family. They're not growling or constantly crying, but that there's an emotional improvement as well as the physical improvements of not having diarrhea or asthma or not able to digest or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
So on our seven keys to health, one,
yeah,
which you're talking about now, is actually a really important piece, is to know where are we now in the health status of our animals. And the way we do that, the best way to know where we are now and then to understand a second key, which is how have they responded to treatment, it's really important that you record things, you write things down, you keep a journal. And so when people begged me to write a book, I just didn't know what to write the book on. And finally, I realized that what's most important is to keep a journal.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote a book called The Healthy Animals Journal. And the purpose of this journal is to make it easy for you to, number one, evaluate the current health of your animal, and number two, evaluate what direction you're going after treatment, and number three, to have a place where you can write down in pretty colors the wonderful, fun things that your animals do. So each animal in your life gets one book.
Where do we get this book?
And you get the book by, at this point, email me at healthyanimals@aol.com. Or if you're at my website, it'll tell you to email me, because my website isn't functioning quite well right now.
And tell us the name of your website.
Myhealthyanimal.com.
Okay. Animal without an S.
Doesn't matter. I've got both of them.
Oh, okay. Good for you. Okay.
And the book, when you get it, has a picture frame on the cover, and you put a picture of whichever animal this journal is for, you put a picture of them in the picture frame. And then you tear out the bookmark. And the bookmark on one side has the early warning signs of illness and how to check for them. So it walks you through checking for these early warning signs of illness. And in the book is a timeline where you write down, since you got your pet, what happened? What happened first? What treatment was given? What happened next? What treatment was given? Maybe they had diarrhea four times before you start the journal. So on the master symptom list, which is on the bookmark, you write diarrhea. You just write it down one time. And then you have, and then you add the early warning signs, goop in the corner of the eyes. Then you start something different. You change the diet. You start homeopathy. You start flower essences. You do something, and you record that on the treatment pages. And then in the bulk of the journal, you record from your bookmark, you record the changes in each symptom, because we always want to look at the whole animal. And on the symptom list on the bookmark, I pre-printed energy, emotional state, appetite, and thirst, because those should be evaluated every time you're evaluating your animal. Mm-hmm. And then, again, in pretty colors, to write down the wonderful things that your animals are doing. Because here's one of the problems that we have. When an animal gets sick, say a goat gets mastitis or is has several things going on at once, all of a sudden develops some joint ailments and got mastitis and has a skin rash and is pulling its hair out, that's all you focus on. And in homeopathy, we ask people to focus on those. What happened with this symptom, this symptom, this symptom? Well, what you focus on is what you get more of. So you want to focus on the positive. The goat is affectionate. The goat is eating. The goat has a glow in its eyes. So you write those in pretty colors while you're tracking those negative symptoms.
That is a wonderful approach. I really love hearing that, because
it's very important for homeopathy for people or animals.
Okay, well, I'd like to let you know we have about 10 minutes left in today's show. So let's see how far we've gotten on the seven keys.
Well, we've really gone through all but one.
Oh, great. So perfect.
Number one is to evaluate the health of the animal. What's the health status now? Number two is to feed the best. Number three is vaccinate the least. Number four is to understand the results of treatment, cure, palliation, and suppression, deeply helping, temporarily helping. Number five is to learn healing modalities that you can use yourself.
Okay.
Number six is one we haven't talked about, so I guess there are two we haven't talked about. Number six is form a healing team.
Oh, okay.
And that should be a veterinarian as part of your healing team. And it could be, hopefully, everybody can find an integrative veterinarian who is trained in some form of holistic health, or it's, at least is very open to it. Now there are enough people doing it that you should take the time to look for one of those, as opposed to putting up with a vet who is going to poo-poo your holistic and homeopathic approaches. Your healing team may include a healing touch practitioner. It may include a chiropractor, an acupuncturist, either a people one or an animal one, but trained in animal care. It might include, and I recommend using, a medical intuitive at all times who can help you decide what's the best approach. It could include somebody who does massage. It could include your groomer. It could include your caretaker for when you're gone, a wonderful holistic shelter that doesn't require vaccines, or a pet sitter who comes to your house, and you have two or three. So this is looking at who do you want to have on your team. And finally, the last one is to use the fewest chemicals. So number one, vaccines has chemicals. Number two, don't use frontline ever, or only if you just are forced into one or two doses. Healthy animals do not have fleas. Anyone who comes to my website and signs up for the newsletter will get a free flea report, flea free naturally. Because I'm having some glitches with my site, if you don't get it when you sign up for the newsletter, email me at healthyanimals@AOL.com and let me know, and I will email it to you immediately. So you also don't want to use, you want to be careful about heartworm preventative. Anything you use, you need to understand. So with heartworm preventative, for instance, a lot of people, the vet says give this every month and you do it. But you don't understand how dogs get heartworms and what this, quote, preventative does. It's not a preventative. It
mm-hmm.
doesn't prevent your dog from getting heartworm larvae crawling through its body. It kills the heartworm larvae as they migrate for months from the where the mosquito bit them and the larvae had to crawl in until it gets to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways to use less of different chemicals. And then you want to look for holistic alternatives for house cleaners, for laundry soap, for dish soap. You want to be sure that you're not doing things in general. This sort of isn't chemical. I'm going to have to add this into my list because it's new. If you go to my website to the blog, a couple of blogs back is about the difference between leashes and harnesses. A homeopathic veterinarian in British Columbia wrote a post that I'm just amazed about. I hadn't thought of. I knew that using leashes was not good because when you jerk on a leash, you're chiropractically throwing the dog off, and so a harness is better. But what I didn't think of is that the thyroid glands are right under the collar. So when you use a collar, you may be causing hypothyroidism. And the dogs who are most likely to get hypothyroidism, labs and golden retrievers, are also dogs that are really friendly and often are pulling on the leash really badly. In his experience, he has found that itchy feet, particularly itchy front feet, ear problems and eye problems also clear up when they change from a collar to a harness in many dogs. And so that's because lymphatic channels and acupuncture meridians run through the neck, and the collar is pressing on them.
Can we apply this to humans, too? Can we get our itchy feet and our goopy eyes and whatever to... Are we wearing something on our body?
No, there's a difference between wearing a collar or wearing a tie
mm-hmm.
and having your neck jerked on. Put a collar on and have somebody hook a leash to you.
Wow.
And you try to run away from them and see what it feels like on your neck. That's
not
very
good.
Different than wearing a turtleneck or putting a tie mm-hmm. around your neck. Now, there certainly could be, if I were a person who was having thyroid issues and I was a man wearing a tie every day,
uh-huh.
I'd stop wearing the tie for sure. But
mm-hmm.
I think it's much different than yanking on a collar with a leash.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Makes sense?
So, yes, it does. Okay, so did we get to all seven?
We did.
Okay.
So again, number one, know the current level of health, feed the
mm-hmm.
best, vaccinate the least, use the fewest chemicals, understand how animals and people become ill and how they heal, learn different healing approaches that you can do yourself, and select the best healers.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to just check on the...
Now, tell people how to... I had emailed those to you. How do they get those?
I'm going to have to figure that out.
Okay.
Where we're going to put them, and we'll write a blog and enable them to get some kind of a download. Nan Wishner is another homeopathic vet, and she's listening in today, and she had a question. She was trying to cover, she wanted to know regarding the vaccines in terms of the different adjuvants in them. For example, should someone ask their vet to use only vaccines with no mercury, or is it, you know, you were mentioning that the frequency can be reduced. But what about, are there specifically vaccines that
no,
are
the bottom line is if you're really, really holistic, you don't give any vaccines at all to puppies and kittens, and you just know that if their vital force or energy field is really susceptible to parvo or panleukopenia, that they may get that illness, and if your homeopathic vet or your acupuncture vet isn't successful, they might die from it, but you'd rather that than have them be chronically ill their whole life. The next step up is to go ahead and vaccinate when they're young, or to use nozodes, homeopathic protection, which may or may not work. We'll do a whole thing on nozodes and vaccines.
Okay.
And so you could do either a few vaccines or a few nozodes until they're grown, and then after that, only the legally required rabies. And at that, when you're doing those few vaccines, it really doesn't matter. They're continually working to make vaccines less harmful, so there are some out there that are less harmful. However, I would rather give the rabies vaccine every 3 years rather than the one that is probably a little better but is only licensed for every year, because it's still giving, it's still triggering that miasm of rabies. So I would rather do it every 3 years. So I wouldn't worry. It basically eliminate giving vaccines rather than worrying about the adjuvants.
Okay. I hope that answers her question, and I want to make a correction that Nan Wishner is a homeopath and she is not a veterinarian.
Right.
Okay.
And are there any other questions that have come up?
Let's see. She was talking here. Standard processed calci food constrains wheat germ, so you need to be careful about giving it to gluten intolerant animals. And that relates to the food and the nutrition.
Yeah, I find that most animals are not really gluten intolerant. There are very, very few of them. And particularly if they're on a raw food diet, then they're not going to be getting any gluten. And that small amount of wheat germ that's in the calci food, I have never found causing a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I use standard processed supplements a lot. And frankly, if people have, it's a good way to start treatment before you find your homeopath or your acupuncturist. So if you have animals with joint problems, thyroid problems, kidney problems, liver problems, go to the Standard Process website, and if you like what you see there, they grow organic vegetables. They're incredible. They buy farms to have them be organic, to say keep more organic out there. They're really a good company. And so if you want to try some of those, you do have to order them, get them from your local chiropractor or local veterinarian. If you can't get them, you can email me, and you can order them through me, and I can ship them to you.
Okay, so you're talking actually about shipping fresh organic vegetables
through? No, they're not fresh. They harvest the fresh vegetables, and then they dehydrate them and get extracts from them. And we could do a whole thing on supplements.
Okay.
So we will do one of our talks on supplements. But this is just these are very good supplements, since I had mentioned them because of the calci food. Anything else from Nan Wisher?
No, we have only about 1 minute left of the show. I want to say thank you for hanging in there with us and our technical sound difficulties. And
next week, same time, same place, we're going to do half an hour on natural flea control.
Excellent.
By then, enough of you who are listening now or are getting this on replay will let us know what topics you want to hear about, and we'll start doing those. We'll certainly cover nutrition, flower essences, vaccines, but let us know what you want, and we'll speak about those.
Great. Okay, so next time it's going to be a 30-minute show at 1 o'clock on... Today is Thursday. Okay, on Thursdays. Thank you so much, and I'm going to end the show. Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brook and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time!